Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone. It's Baba Wetafa, Father of Many Nations, your host right here on People Power Radio, right here in Oklahoma City. First of all, before we get too far into the broadcast, let me say that I hope that each and every one of you is safe and sound and out of harm's way. Tonight here in Oklahoma City, we have a terrible tornado, and it has been riddling and making a lot of noise and dropping a whole lot of water from the sky. So, again, those of you who can, please try to take care. Stay away from your windows and doors and other places where you could possibly be hurt. All praise are due to God. Again, this is Baba Wetafa right here in Oklahoma City. I'm your host with the most, Sister Mayette, but you boys not here tonight. Again, maybe she will be on a little later, but again, I hope that she's safe and sound as well as you and everyone else. I have a question to pose to each and every one of you tonight. Is there a genocidal plot to kill off the African-American community here in the United States? And for the most part, we can even ask that question, does this threat of genocide occur, and or is it a possibility that it is affecting us on every sphere of the United States and in throughout all the other countries in the world? Now, this has to be a question I have to pose all of us. But before I pose the question and ask you to answer it, let me give a little bit of history and background on what I have studied and found out and what my investigations has revealed regarding the plot to exterminate blacks here in the Western Hemisphere, in America, and throughout the world. Does racism exist in the United States? And does racism amount to an equalization of exterminating and or genocidal effect when it comes to addressing the African-American situation in America? When asking this question, I can think of genocidal exterminations of indigenous people even before Africa, and then even after Africa, the United States. Let's take, for example, the black people in Namibia who were slaughtered by the Germans, and then let us not forget about the black population in Argentina. Again, these populations were wiped out, exterminated by the powers that be, including the government and white supremacists who were in authority and power and in control at that time. Moving forward to blacks existing in the United States, where black genocide is defined by the atrocious, murderous behavior of this government of the United States, along with its cohorts, the white supremacist Americans, who themselves feel that exterminating and or getting rid of the black population is a chore that they plan to perfect, and it seems to me that they're going through and throughout to actually reach that climactic goal. When we think about the callous lynchings, number one, and how this mixed with racial discrimination on every level in government in the United States where blacks are concerned, at least we can say by that point alone that this is a fact that was brought to the United Nations by the former but no longer existing Civil Rights Congress, who brought it to the government of the United Nations in 1951. My brother, Minister Malcolm X, may he rest in peace, accused the government of genocide in the middle to early 60s, of exterminating black folks and are trying to rid us of our property, our land, our souls, our mind, and psychology, and anything else that pertains to us. Let us not forget about the white supremacist Margaret Singer, who again, through her Planned Parenthood, and who was also used a birth control sterilization program to kill off many black families in the ghetto, more so than any other areas of our government. She was of the Eugenics Society, and it was introduced to her by the eugenists of the 1860s by Francis Dalton and company. Now, when we still go further, let's go back to 1973 when the sponsored program by the government of the United States in 1973 sponsored a compulsory sterilization program that was geared toward affecting and abusing the African-American community. Yes, more than anything, let me think about another point while I'm on it. Okay, we have many people today who, again, the black community, most of all, were affected by the war on drugs, the war on crime, and the war on poverty. Now, if you look at all these areas, who was hit most in our black communities than the black community when it comes to the war on drugs, war on crime, and war on poverty? No question, y'all, it was us. Well, another frightening fact I want everybody to think about is we are 13% of the American population, and guess what? We make up more than 40% of those incarcerated. Now, I don't have to tell any of you who are listening today that I think you feel exactly where I'm coming from, because when it comes to the African Americans here in the Western Hemisphere, it's no question that genocide has affected us on the first day we landed on Plymouth Rock, as Brother Malcolm X stated many years ago, especially in the early 60s. So Let's think about this. Not only is it genocide in all these other areas that I previously spoke about, but let us think about the areas of slavery for the most part. Now, everybody knows the traumatic disease and the horrific conditions that blacks were subjected to during the slave plantations here in the United States. Some of us say that we came here in the 1550s by slave. That doesn't mean all of us were slaves, because there were some of us who were not slaves for actually the first 20 before they were actually like indentured servants. But for the majority of us who came over, our ancestors, around the 19th century, we are actually those people, and then 1550 to about the 19th century, those were the people who were subjected to the most cruel and unusual punishment, denial of education and training and jobs and housing and medical procedures here in the United States. Everybody knows for a fact that slavery was, without question, crimes against humanity. Okay, nobody can even question that. As a matter of fact, in the 20th century, we all know that George Washington Williams populated the concept of crimes against humanity. It was his statement that really coined it and gave us the understanding what the Congo Free State propaganda war of the 1980s was all about. Excuse me, 1890s was all about. So again, y'all, legally, we have to really feel as African American in the Western Hemisphere, but there's a fear on our head. We're trying to figure out just what is going on in terms of who we are facing, what we're going up against, and how we deal with this genocidal effect here in the United States. Canada scholar Adam Jones characterized the mass death of millions of Africans in the transatlantic slave trade as genocide. Now, I had a brother talking to Brother Ed Smith the other night. We were on Facebook, and he was asking me, actually, I wrote a post about this program coming tonight, and I asked the question that popped it to everybody and everybody who wanted to answer it. Is there a genocidal plot to kill the African-American here in the Western Hemisphere of the United States? And he figured, well, he made a statement that he did not believe it was. But I guarantee you, there's no question that the plot to genocide and exterminate the African-American race in the United States actually is a foregone conclusion, because that plot was enlisted the first time we were enslaved, our ancestors, on those filthy slave ships, smothered, not fed, killed, thrown overboard, so forth and so on. So that tells me, it's no question, that from its inception of slavery, genocide was the target of the white supremacist agenda. Now, of course, they can't exterminate and kill all of us. I mean, we know that. So the whole point of the matter was, those that they couldn't kill, they wanted to make life as miserable and intolerable as possible. And because that was the effect, now we have homelessness, drugs, crime, prison, death, and we have lack of education, lack of jobs, lack of medical procedures, lack of psychological services, and all of this plays a gigantic role in the sophisticated project and program of the white supremacists and the government to belittle and or kill off the African-American race of people. Now, those that they want to leave behind, they want to remain as puppets. They want us to be docile. They want us to be not incorrigible, but they want us to be patient. They want us to be committed to decency and the desire and wishes of the slave master and their children. They don't want us to argue back. Again, they want us to be docile, unarguable, simple, feeble-minded, as Margaret Singer and the eugenics movement supporters used and coined that phrase. The killing and destruction of our people was intentional. Whatever the incentive was behind it, even the survivors of the Atlantic slave trade, they were those that did make it through the Middle Passage were themselves later in bondage, chained, slavery, suffering and death, and were forced to work chattel labor free of charge in the cotton fields, in the rice fields, tobacco fields, in any other field that you can name at this point in time. So when we revisit the institution of slavery in the United States, we have to equate it with the deliberate maintaining and or expansion of a discernible agent, and that is the people in control of the black folks today, again, better known as Caucasians in the Caucasus Mountains. They are the ones, again, who came to Africa in various phases, the Portuguese, the Dutch, the Germans, the Romans, the French, Belgian, and those people like that. Each one of them, when they came into the Alkibo land, the land of the dark-skinned people, the land of all birth, they in turn separated lands by when each one of them ruled that particular time that they were set foot in Africa. Harvard professor Walter Johnson, who wrote in his book, The Broken Heart of America, thought throughout the time of enslavement of Africans in the United States, he stated that genocide have occurred many times, including the separation of men from their wives, effectively reducing the population. Now, again, this goes back to the auspices of Margaret Sanger and the eugenics movement. When you take a black family and separate the man from the woman, however you want to do it, either way, both of them at one point in time was subjected to such cruel and unusual punishment, there's no question that you're going to have a limitation on the amount of children they're going to have, and for the most part, you're going to basically almost become eradicated and extinct as a race of people. And a matter of fact, I believe somewhere I read where the black folks today are on the endangered species list that you would normally find on specialized rare animals. So I guess they're seeing us as rare animals to put us on the list of the endangered species. Think about it. Whether you believe in slavery or not, whether you believe in genocide that's going on with our black community here in the United States, believe it or not, it is very real. According to author Khalid Gabriel Muhammad, the majority of the white people who envisioned the day coming when black people were legally deemed equal were abolitionists. Let me say the difference here. The white supremacists and abolitionists are two distinct group of white folks who have a different measure and different way in which they believe that blacks should be enshrined into the American way of life. Now, the white supremacists, the eugenics, and others of those kind of government agents who are laced with Ku Klux Klan, White Citizens Council, and various others, they think that the black man should have no right or privileges or immunity and have only, for the most part, agreed to give us basic, certain, similar rights to quell or quiet those people who like them, feel that they've gone on long enough discriminating and holding down the African-American community with their foot on our necks. So again, y'all, this is very important that we understand this. This was a sophisticated process that is a long way from being over. Okay, long way from being over. Again, so now I'm talking about the abolitionists like John Brown, for one. Again, you know, he was born around the time, actually was an activist around the time of Frederick Douglass, and both men, and for the most part, during their insurrections, parted ways after they spoke to one another, briefly. When enslaved African Americans were emancipated, so-called emancipated through the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863, we know it wasn't any such thing, but we'll go forth for as far as being written on records. Many of the white fellow Americans were uncomfortable with the idea of these two races living among each other, coexisting in the same nation with the same equal rights. This would have counter and contradicted the same mindset, the racist propaganda that was enshrined into the very practices and mannerisms of the white supremacists who kidnapped Africans and brought them here not for to being equal, but to be less than three-fifths human being and chattel slaves working on the slave plantation in the cotton fields, in the tobacco fields, in the rice fields, so forth and so on. You were not intended to be on the equal level as were the whites. If that were not so, you would be economically inclined on a level of superiority as the white race is today. And I'm not talking about a handful of blacks fitting into the mainstream of what America has to offer. I'm talking about the majority of us who don't have a pot to pee in. I'll stop saying a P-I-S-S. I'll stop it short of that. Many white Americans began to advocate the colonization of African nations with black Americans. Okay. So they had actually gone to a great extent, to a great degree, whites were, they were plotting to say, okay, rather than side with or live next door to black heathens, let's plot to send them back to Africa. And many were enthused and encouraged by Marcus Garvey back to Africa campaign, and large part actually supported him. But there again, we had some Zionist Jews here in the United States who felt threatened by this very legal and very frightening suggestion that Marcus Garvey held. Well, he was set up, deported back to, I believe, Jamaica, and there he no longer was allowed to put his United Negro Improvement Association together and amass the great numbers that were actually start to follow him in the United States. Now, let's talk about a little bit about the United Nations. Now, okay, let me tell y'all something, that the United States were not alone in this horrid, frightening, deadly, unconstitutional practice of genocide against the African-American community. Now, the United Nations was formed in 1945, okay, and the United Nations debated and adopted a genocidal convention in late 1948. Now, think about it, a genocidal convention. They held that genocide was the intent to destroy, in whole and part, a racial group. So they defined it up there, the various nations that made up the United Nations at that time. Now, based upon the so-called in part definition, the Civil Rights Congress, which no longer exists, I spoke of them very earlier, they were a group of composed of African Americans with communist affiliations. Okay, now we know for the most part communists that will counter the democratic process in the United States. So again, we know that there was a conflict that arose when these black Americans presented their argument to the United Nations in 1951 in a petition they call We Charge Genocide. Okay, so the petition, you know, is basically saying there were tens of thousands of unjustified deaths of African Americans in the 9 decades since the Civil War. Now, listen to this. This is, I'm talking about after the Civil War. Okay? The deaths of blacks were insurmountable after the Civil War, and this is a fact today that none of us really can deny or question, because when you look at the Confederate States and the blacks that died on both during the Civil War, when they fought on both ends for the North and South, there were tragedies that were abounding. As a matter of fact, many of the blacks were on the front lines and helped to win the Civil War overall. When you think about, again, after the Civil War, now watch this, after the Civil War, lynchings and mistreatment and murder and oppression by whites of blacks were insurmountable, unquestionable, and certainly could not be calculated in numbers. The United States government refused to recognize the killings of the African-American people. They refused to address it and allowed the widespread institutionalized commission of death, murder, and homelessness to be committed against blacks, and the crime of genocide was so far gone that it was a foregone conclusion that the government did not intend for blacks to come out of slavery and be a part of the mainstream of what America had to offer. So I'm telling you all of you this here tonight because we need to stop and ask questions. Is there a genocide effect going on to exterminate the African-American community here in the United Snakes of America? Now, I said that to say this because I am totally one who is upset about this very mad reality that is visited upon us, y'all. I'm going to tell y'all. Y'all know when I get upset, I mean, I try to hold myself because the time for play is over with.
I'll say.
All right, that's just me. All right. Good. All right, my beautiful sister. How you doing tonight?
Doing good. We're just right in the middle of a tornado warning.
Yeah, I was telling people about that when you got on. Yeah, I told everybody about it. I made everybody aware, and I hope that everybody was safe. I included you and others and anybody else that was subjected to this harsh wind. I mean, the water's blowing every which way, so forth and so on. So it was definitely pretty tough.
Yeah, it just passed me like 5 minutes ago.
Oh, did? Oh, yeah. Well, I figured that. Like I said, I told everybody about it. I told them that you may be late because of that and several others as well because, like I said, this is very first of all, your safety and concern and being in out of harm's way is number one in anybody's, you know, so we're going to put it down for you as well. But let me say right quick before, and then I'll give you the floor here in just a minute. As I was stating, y'all, the murderous oppression and lynching and mistreatment of blacks by this white supremacist government, who in turn deputized these white supremacists, white eugenics movers. Listen, everybody, look, I'm trying to give y'all some deep definitions. These are parts of my book that I'm reading to y'all that y'all didn't know I was writing, okay? So a lot of stuff that y'all will be hearing me talk about, yes, they're mine, my words, my direction, and my conclusions, okay? But don't take my word for it. Go to the various reference books that I reference when I write this book. It's not quite finished yet, but when I do finish it, it's going to be about 350 pages long. Personal experiences I've learned from others, as well as I've studied, and those I've been exposed by, so forth and so on. But I want you all to know that, again, we're talking tonight about, is there a genocidal effect to exterminate the African-American here in the Western Hemisphere and abroad, as far as that is concerned. Now, the United Nations, again, like I say, was formed in 1945. It's no question in everybody's mind that not only did the United States enslave, in bondage, murder, and ravish African-Americans here in the Western Hemisphere, or Africans before that time, before we were known as African-Americans, our people were in bondage, in slavery, suffering, and death in Europe, Spain, Rome, Portugal, and all those places as well. And these same governments, as I just spoke about earlier, in turn traded off running various part of the African continent, and in turn took back our artifacts, our gold, uranium, copper, silver, and any and everything that goes along with this design. So again, y'all, the eugenics movement, the racist white supremacist policies of the United States is frightening, and I want all of you to know. Then we're going to let Sister Mayor come in. I want all of y'all to know that before we finish, I'm not finished yet, but what I want to do is get some more comments from you people out there. I see the brother here on the line with us as well. I want to get a few comments from you, and then we're going to say what we need to do as the African-American here in the Western Hemisphere, in the diaspora. Yeah. Now, Brother John, thank you for asking the question. When I say diaspora, brother, I mean Africans who, in turn, are no longer basically living in our Kibo-land, the land of the dark-skinned people. That is an ancient term for Idiapi, Ethiopia, the land of the dark-skinned people. Okay, so again, that is what that is all about. Okay. Now, Sister Mayette, I mean, let me take a break a little bit here, and then I can pick back up. And I mean, tell me what you think about what you got to tell me tonight.
Ashe, I feel like they are, purposely trying to make our numbers small wherever we put our feet in, whether it's Europe, whether it's the United States, whether it's a small town in Alabama, like everywhere we go, everybody's programmed to say, okay, we are the lesser ones, we're not to be valued, and our lives are not held to the same standard as any other race. Other than ours, so we're at the low totem pole in their eyes, and the higher ups and the ones with the money is the one controlling our population at this point, either trying to poison us or with their programming, or with this vaccine stuff and all this medical accidents that they have, all the police accidental killings. All this stuff is not a coincidence. This stuff is happening on purpose to control our population. Not just they have their own agenda to control the entire population other than the ones with money, but they have a special agenda for us African descendants to keep our numbers low. So that's been their goal since before I was born. Me just looking into the stuff that they were doing way before most of us on this call was even thought of. You know what I mean? The data's out there, information's out there. They've done this stuff in slavery times by separating the homes, by keeping all the men in one area, the women over here, selling them off, splitting up the family, doing all these things during slavery times just to control our population. You know what I mean? Just to control us and to keep our numbers small so that they can be still dominant in whatever area that they're in. So, you know, it's a whole agenda for them, and they started that way before, and they're continuing it, and it's just evolving over time into now it's just incarceration, you know, wrongful shooting that they get off on every, almost most of the cases, they'll sacrifice a couple and put them in jail, but they're not going to put all of them there. And most of the stories.
Oh, no, no.
Even with sterilization and the medical portion, you know what I mean? How they, you know, value our lives on the medical field, on the medical side of things. They look at us like, oh, you can tolerate pain. Oh, you can overdose us. All these kind of things happen.
Wow.
You know, from different angles, they're still, you know, pretty much saying this is the highest that the African descendant community can get to. And now it's getting a little scary, you know, hey, we're going to have to cut them down a little bit. You know what I mean? I'm going to let this slide. So, you know, that'll get that right there. Oh, well, let's get them to, you know, turn against each other in this portion. They'll go off and start killing each other. You know, they do little stuff like that. Let's pump out more. You know, they have stuff in the water also. You know what I mean? They pump medicines and chemicals and all that kind of stuff through the water. Like,
oxygen
and all kind of different opiates and stuff through the water. I was looking at that into specific communities. It's not in their white neighborhood. It's not sitting out over there by the White House. It's not over here by any capital. In any state, it's not their water. It's the as they call the ghettos, as they call the little country towns off to the side where we're at. You know what I mean? So they're doing so many little things here and there to cut us down. That you know, it would be absolutely stupid of them if they came from one angle. Then everybody would see them, and it would be exposed. They do it in sneaky ways and scatter it around just to keep our numbers down and just to keep our population low. So that's what I have noticed, done my research on, and see it even to this day of, you know, stuff going on to us for no absolute reason. They don't care. You know what I mean? They have an agenda. And some of them are following it willingly, and some of them are just playing. They're just trying to make a check every day, so they're following what, you know, what they're told to do on their jobs. You know what I mean? But either way, they're still wrong, and they're still on that same path, working with each other to keep us at the level that we're at now.
Wow, Mayat, you were that's ice water there. I recognize a brother here as well. I think that's his number 202. Excuse me if I'm wrong, but if I mean, definitely, if you want to speak on the topic, you can.
I'm 202.
Oh, come on. Oh, come on with it, sis. Come on with it. Talk to me.
Oh, well, this is Sister Robinson. What
How you doing?
Is, I'm blessed. I'm good. How's everybody tonight?
Oh, we're blessed. So I'll tell you. Yes.
Good. I just wanted to say that if you refer back to the tribunal of 2021, the international tribunal that found the United States guilty of crimes against humanity, okay, what that kind of like entailed was a lot of different things. And I'm just going to go over a little bit of the findings. One was that the police killing, okay, they found that black people were being killed 3.5 times more likely than white people were killed by the police. Okay, so, and the bad part about this is the black people that are being killed are not attacking at all. Okay, this is in the data here that we're not attacking and do not have a weapon. Okay, another thing that they touched on was mass incarceration. Because if our melanated brothers are imprisoned from the pipeline of prison program here, then they cannot have families. Okay,
that's right.
So that's your political prisoners and your prisoners of war. You know, so it was a lot of things that was found there. I just referenced that so y'all can go over it because it's just so much stuff to just get into, like on one phone call. Then you have, like, your environmental racism and stuff like that. But I wanted to get into the Planned Parenthood that they put into the predominantly red
district community. That's
right.
Okay, so they put them in those neighborhoods. So when we were young ladies growing up, we thought that was the ideal thing. You have a clinic down the street.
Right.
We can go get birth control pills. We don't need a note from our doctor. But what it was is to control us from having children. And a lot of people was going to these Planned Parenthood clinics without their parents' consent, getting birth control pills and things of that nature. And then a lot of women are having abortions, okay, getting rid of children. And then when you get into when you get into the community, how they're promoting the LGBTQ community, which I have nothing against anybody. Let me put that out there first. I'm gonna put that out there first. But that's a form of genocide, also. You know, when you're promoting they are not creating children like that. But they can adopt children and raise them. That's going to be the argument. But those were just a few things that I remembered from the tribunal. And just growing up in the hood, you seen the clinics, you know, that was a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't mind giving you birth control pills. They didn't care what your medical history was, any of that.
Right.
And I also want to reference a good book. It's called Medical Apartheid. That is a good book.
I heard that one. Ooh.
That's
I want to read it too.
Medical apartheid will tell you what this country has done to us. They experimented on the black woman when we were slaves. Dr. Sims experimented on us, took our uteruses out, gave us hysterectomy.
Sure, they did.
Okay, with no anesthesia, no pain medicine.
Yeah, thank you.
They were saying that black women did not have pain like other women. Those women were traumatized in pain, barren, and all of that. Then when he finished experimenting on us, on our women, guess what he did? He took all of his findings that he had mastered by this time after treating us so badly and took it to and gave it to the white woman with anesthesia. They were having hysterectomy with anesthesia, but we didn't get any anesthesia. So it's still, even today, if you read the article about Serena Williams, how she had to advocate for herself, or she would have died when she had her baby, it's still today they treat the black woman different in the hospital.
Oh.
You know, when COVID came out, you saying pandemic or plandemic? Because I was thinking maybe
plandemic. I like it.
It's a pandemic.
So I was thinking that, you know, maybe we need to have some kind of form of surveillance on these doctors and this medical staff. And don't forget that black sister, the doctor that died, that they wouldn't give the proper medication to the same.
All right. I saw on TV talking about how you did it. You're doggone right.
So we have so much evidence of them trying to extinguish us from this country. It's just all, it's written. Everything that you all have spoken about is documented. So it's no doubt.
Oh, no question. Oh, man, I got a laundry list like
seven
books. I'm writing my, people
can
come to mind along, but this will get some history that you hadn't heard before, believe me.
Yeah, so, you know, my thing is we have to, like, come up with emergency response plans to this stuff.
That's right.
For the next pandemic, you know, when Hurricane Katrina hit, we should have been studying, we should have been preparing, we should have been organizing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
When the last, what was it, when Ebola, was it Ebola?
Ebola.
Yeah, when Ebola hit,
Ebola,
we should have been preparing, we should have been getting ready. We would have been halfway ready for COVID-19. So now
you're right.
This, we can't just sit here and wait for the next thing to come. or happen. We have to stay ahead. We need local plans. We need national plans. We, you know what I'm saying? So these kind of things that we have to put into motion, we need organizations that just do research all day long. We need research teams. We need organizations that deal with legal services all day long. Whatever you're good at, let's break this down. Everybody wants to be seen.
At the table.
Everybody wants to be seen. Everybody want to be against each other. Everybody want to be a chief. No Indians. It's not working for us. Nothing that we're doing right now, people are working for us. We are really in a state of emergency as far as I'm concerned because we are trying to catch up. We're trying to stay alive in the middle, and we're trying to plan for the future all at one time. So it's like being in four dimensions at the same time. So we have to work together.
Hold that thought for me just a second. Don't you go anywhere with that one. We're going to lace that up some more. But I want to hear what Mayotte has to say about it after listening to all what the sister Robinson was saying. What are your thoughts on that? What do you take away from all that?
I too have been, reading the medical apartheid, and boy, you got to take that book in sections because in the beginning it explains all the gruesome procedures that they practice on us and being a black female. Experiencing going to a female doctor, going to the gynecologist, as we call it, the correct term, they don't really pay attention to us like they do the white woman. They look at us like, oh, okay, well, you're fine. Well, we'll see you back next year. You know what I mean? Like, they're not really caring. So even me, myself, I've had to go to different doctors, anything. I always try to get two opinions because I already know how they do when it comes to us, So, and I got to the portion where they were talking about how we were on display. They were so amazed with, our fairly large body parts, as I'm going to put it, tastefully.
Of course, sure they do. Come on now. We're disrespecting
it. They're looking at us all where they're nice to look at. Like, look at them. They're some exotic animal. And it shows in public, too. That's how they treat us out here. And we, ain't nothing happened to us at all. We're exotic animals to them. And they still look at us as cattle or property.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's why I get so offended when people are like, oh, my God, like you ain't seen a black person, and you've been alive for this long. Like, you don't have to try to pet my hair or do all these other things, to us. But when it's time, for us and we're going through something or something happens, we don't get that same energy when they're trying to exploit us or they're excited about what we can do and our athletic abilities and all these different aspects that they glorify and worship and want to be. You know what I mean? So they look at us as display. We're display, we're workers, we're cattle, we're everything other than us people. As if we are equal, as they scream out equality, which is a bunch of bullshit, because they don't treat us like that across every single board. So, I just be like, I'm like, I already know what you're trying to do. I know what your agenda is. I know that y'all talk about this, and y'all are moving progressively forward, quote unquote, in y'all movement, on trying to destroy us, but that's not going to succeed because everybody is now waking up. Everybody is now paying attention to these planned events that they put out here, planned things, how we go from having no mask, and then all of a sudden everybody throw a mask on. Everybody, you can't even touch the counters, or you can't, touch somebody.
That's right. All that. That's real.
Breathe in the same area. Oh, it lives on the surface with 72 hours. Wait, it's 24 hours. Wait, it's 10 hours. Oh, wait, mask mandates is over. Oh, never mind. Come on now.
Yes.
I,
Yes.
Us people that know the medical portion, it don't work like that. And I don't understand why they don't see that, but they got to go on to the agenda too. They got to keep saying, I don't care if it don't make no sense, keep telling them that this is what you need to do. We need to get this vaccine. So, you know, it's a whole bunch of different angles, but that's my two cents.
Boy, y'all lighting it up. Hey, man, I tell you what, I couldn't have had the two better guests, especially you ladies here that's giving it to your version, because, like you said, when it comes to the forced sterilization of women, I mean, definitely you women would fit the ideal human being for these experimentations. So let me say this right here. Now, watch this one. Beginning in 1907, this is in my book as well, in 1907, United States legislators passed law allowing for compulsory sterilization of criminals now. Watch it now. Listen carefully. If you were criminal, you immediately got sterilized because the legislator said you can't squawk about it, didn't violate your rights. And guess what? Mentally retarded people were included as well. Come on now.
Wow.
What is that telling y'all, man, if the eugenics was not trying to establish and or create a superior race of people? I keep telling everyone, watch once again, my book reveals it, that the eugenics system, E-U-G-E-N-I-C-S, eugenics system, which Margaret Sanger used and employed through this eugenics society, what has become known now as Planned Parenthood. Listen to that, Planned Parenthood. I plan for you to have a family, everybody but blacks and other minorities of color. Now, there are a few whites who were raped by their own father, or brother, or sister, or somebody that naturally they gave them an abortion. I mean, but ours was forced sterilization for the purpose of limiting our population on the face of the earth. Now, watch this here. At first, African Americans and whites, like say one or two of those, they were forced into forced sterilization. And by 1945, watch this, y'all, there were 70,000 Americans who had been sterilized in these programs. Yes, watch this. That's what fortified the Aid to Families with Dependent Children Act. Okay? So that means that if I give you my government check, you got to do what I say when I say us have a threat of me taking it from you. So whites did not worry about subsidizing, you know, subsidiary checks and things of black families because they knew we were going to do basically anything. Watch this one now. Watch it. That we were going to do anything to keep the money coming. So what did they do? They tricked our women. I tell you what, you cut your child off at 3 and have no more, come down, get the sterilization, and you don't have to worry about being cut off from your checks. So, yes, you ladies are absolutely right. There was a genocidal plot even way back then. And guess what? There are many of our black brothers and sisters who came out of college who didn't even get a chance to have a future with a family and children. They were immediately sterilized as well. And watch this one. In 1907, when the government passed, and then y'all ladies can jump in, when the government passed the compulsory sterilization of criminals, who were getting in them? Who were classified as more criminal than anybody but the blacks? That was designed and targeting the black race of people, especially after the Civil War, when a lot of these injustices incurred the most. What you thought about that, Ms. Robinson? Talk to me.
Well, you know, sterilization has been going on for quite some time, like I said, all the way back to slavery. But we have to remember that they were laws put into place in different states. The thing with eugenics was it affected every race, but what they were looking at was they were calling people feeble-minded was actually a mental diagnosis back then. So if they looked at you as feeble-minded back then, then they had the right to make sure that you did not procreate. Yeah, make sure that you did not procreate, and that affected all people. By 1913, many states were on their way to having eugenic sterilization laws. Okay, and that was by the Boston Medical Library in France's Countway Library of Medicine. Okay, so this man, Sims is his name, they had a statue was still up there in Central Park in New York. They just took that statue down in 2017, just a little side note. But from like 1937 to 1966, black women were most likely to be forcibly sterilized, okay, in the state of North Carolina. Now that's in the South. It was a lot more prevalent in the South. It was a lot more prevalent in the South, unfortunately. So with all of that being said, nothing's really changed. I have a female friend that went to the doctor and found out she has a whole ovary missing. So somewhere in between one of her surgeries, they just took one of her ovaries, you know, and decided to sell it.
You ain't selling them to people in Argentina and places like this.
Yeah, one ovary is $7,500. Was $7,500. I don't know how much it is now. So, you know, body parts is a big market, too. It's a black market where you can go
and
buy body parts. So they kill us for our body parts with all of this human trafficking and sex trafficking and organ harvesting. All of that is designed to keep the oppressors alive because they're the only ones that can afford this stuff. We can't afford to buy body parts. We wait for years to get kidneys and livers and things like that. And forget buying a heart. It's just too expensive. So that's something else to look at.
Yeah. All right. Beautiful. So, may I come on, talk to me. I know you got inspired. You ready to say something five, 10 minutes ago. What's up with it?
I'm starting to see the whole sex trafficking and all that stuff picking up.
Yes.
And it's going on every single where. You know, we've had so many countless stories of, you know, our brothers and sisters being, you know, found dead and missing organs being stuffed with things and optics and whatever else they can, you know, put in there to close up the fact that they have been operated on. You know what I mean? So it's a real touchy subject. At the same time, it needs to be addressed because you never know. I even got a message today, or I even saw a message today saying about these spam calls and these random text messages saying, hey, open this link. They're linked to sex trafficking. They're linked to sex trafficking, and then they can track your phone if you open a URL, which is very possible for anyone to do. You've gotta be on your toes because you never know, you know, who is, you know, who is doing what and, you know, what their agenda is. But we're on the target list, and no matter, you know, where you are, if you have melanated black skin, you are a target. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You have to take that very seriously because it's from too many different angles they're coming for us. You know what I mean? And as much as we live life and enjoy life, we've also got to live it very dangerously and vigilant because we don't know, you know, who is, you know, going to try to snatch our kids up, you know, going to try to kill our men and take away our women with sex trafficking and anything else. You know what I mean? And, you know, we always have those Uncle Toms, you know, that play into those parts too. So you've got to be careful on that end. You know what I mean? Because we get sometimes set up by our own people that don't want to acknowledge what's going on, that are only looking for a quick check or a quick fix to their own problems. You know, and that's a whole nother topic. But, you know, I've seen, you know, when I worked in the hospital, we've had, you know, people come in on sex trafficking charges when we've had to do precautions and turn our badges around, you know what I mean? Not really spend too much time doing a certain thing around them, you know, because they study you and they pay attention to you so that they know your habits. They can track you, you know what I mean? They can follow you. So be very careful out there when you're commuting, no matter where you at. You know, it's too much evidence out here for us to be just living carefree without some type of level of awareness of what's going on. And that's what alarms me the most about our community. We have got to take it seriously. We've got to, even
That's
if
real.
It looks like it's a good day outside, we've got to think danger can meet us at any moment. And I push people to get a firearm because I and other people I know have been, they've been in, we've been in life-threatening situations where it could have meant anyway. You know what I mean? So, and hearing about us getting, you know, coming out of stores and getting shot and killed in the parking lot, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing what was out there. You know, it's a lot of different scenarios. So that's why I tell people to have some type of protection, a good level of awareness and understanding of what's going on out here. We cannot be asleep anymore because now we are putting ourselves, you know, in a position where we can't even get ourselves out of because we're not acknowledging the danger and the threat ahead of us. You know what I mean? So that's just my take on it.
Hey, I tell you what, you ladies are lighting it up. I got some people out there for it. Matter of fact, a lady named Rachel up there in Miami, Florida, she wanted to ask you a question, Sister Roberts. She wanted to ask you what got your understanding into, she wanted to know if you were a black militant, whether you were just a conscious black person or melanated person. Give us some information. I don't want to just say anything on your behalf without you doing it. And then she wanted to ask you the same thing, may I? Go ahead, Sister Roberts.
Oh, well, I'm a member of the New African Black Panther Party. I am also a member of the Black Liberation Army. I am also a black mother, citizen, a concerned, very concerned citizen, a community leader, activist. I'm a consultant, a human rights consultant. So I pride myself on helping my people. And trying to, I might not see it, you know, because of my age and where we are right now. But I think that if we lay down the groundwork for the youth that's coming behind us and for the young people like this Sister Maya on the line to carry the torch, you know, so we can go ahead and prepare them and lead them in the right direction. Because right now, what's happening is a lot of people think that it's cool, especially the young people, it's cool to carry weapons and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But your first line of defense should be education. Your first line of defense should be education because if you don't have the knowledge, you don't know how to fight anybody. And the fight is not really with guns and stuff like that. The fight is a lot of psychological warfare. We have a whole lot of different types of warfare that's tearing us up.
That's right. Come on.
Coming from other countries. Other countries is tearing us up. You know, look at China. We slept on China. China, I mean, it's all kind of warfare. Do you pay attention to the chemtrails in the sky? When you go out the house in the morning, do you ever wonder what in the world are they putting in the air? Especially in 2020 when COVID was frightening to everybody and no one understood it. So what is the chemtrails? What's in that? What are they putting in the air? Do we ask questions? I have pictures of
That's where the pandemic come from.
Yeah, I mean, so then I seen the airplane spraying stuff in the air one morning. I'm like, so these are the types of things that we have to be conscious of, but just don't be conscious and sit on it and be cute and mute. We have to speak up on it. We have to speak up. So we have to ask these questions. Now, we may not get the right answers, but, you know, that's why I said we need to research. We need to read. We need to educate our young people. If that calls for staying at home and homeschooling them, so be it. because they are not getting the right. They are not getting the right information. Too many kids are missing, so that means that some very important people are involved, people that are trusted. You know, why aren't there traffic stops for these big white vans that's riding by my neighborhood? Things like that make you go, see what I'm saying? So, you know, yes, I mean, they are definitely exterminating us more so.
Damn.
They're using us for experimentation. To heal themselves, Did y'all hear the report that they think it's life on Jupiter now?
Wow, I didn't hear that one. I might have heard it for long.
It could be life on Jupiter now. So these people are trying to find an escape route. And that's why I say we have to plan one as well. We have to be ready for whatever is coming. We have to research, read, study, organize. We have to do all of that.
Wow, very beautiful. Rachel, did she answer your question for you as far as she's concerned, her involvement in the movement? Okay, good, good. Now, hold on now. We're going to let you speak a little bit more, but we're going to let you ask your question. She wants to know what is your stance, whether you're black militant and how you became conscious, or you just in the struggle, or what's going on with it? Talk to them. I'm going to let y'all, like I said, explain your own, because y'all explain it better than I can.
I say I am a black militant. I am the chairwoman of the Fred Hampton Gun Club, Oklahoma City. We have a bunch of different chapters across the United States, and we're still growing. I'm woke. I'm very, very woke. I accepted my call, and I accepted everything in life that needed to be in my path. So my biggest thing I push is education and to be vigilant and to be dangerous, because, you know, I've been in situations before I became a revolutionary where reality hit and I saw the true colors of everyone around me, you know what I mean, including the people of other races that I thought were friends and became foes very quickly, you know, when I embraced my culture, when I embraced who I was supposed to be, you know, and they would look at me kind of funny, and I'm just like, well, this is reality, you know what I mean, this is what's going on, you know what I mean, and seeing the killings of some of my classmates, you know, from a police officer, seeing all those things happen in front of me before I accepted what was actually happening out here, before I acknowledged that they have an agenda for us, you know what I mean, being discriminated on in the work environment, you know, is another one that pushed me to do my research about a lot of this stuff, you know, a couple of years back. About what was happening, you know what I mean? Why am I getting treated different? I have the same level of education as my white counterpart, but I'm not getting the same opportunities. You know, I'm getting discriminated at work, but on this other end, it's like, okay, well, we don't really care about that, but we care about these people over here. And it's like, okay, well, I'm the only, you know, African-American woman in here. You know what I mean? What's going on? So I had to accept what was actually happening, because I grew up in a neighborhood that was predominantly white. It was literally maybe 20 of us, you know, African-descended students that were there in the class of 100. So we were pretty much washed in their culture until we said, okay, no, that's not cool. You're not teaching us anything about our history. You're not teaching us anything about us. We're out here celebrating. What about us? You know, we get a couple of days, you know, to talk about our ancestors, but y'all get the rest of the full year. Like, this doesn't feel fair. So a bunch of us got together and was talking about it. And a lot of them now, I reconnect with them, you know, 10 plus years later after school. And, you know, they're fully woke, you know what I mean? Because we were forced in that. We were living in their reality, not ours, you know what I mean? And when we begin to experience life and, you know, their ways of limiting us in success, their ways of keeping us in the ghettos and keeping us poor, you know, all these different things. Woke us up to what reality was when we began to live life out here. So that's my take and point of view, just a little bit about me.
All right. Now, that's very important. Hey, now, you ladies were definitely, again, electrifying tonight. I definitely want y'all to know that I appreciate everything that you're talking about. And now you just had to ask about me. Why you do that? Why you put me on the spot? I mean, you got these two ladies going to jump on me next time they see me. No. Hey, no, they're really good friends. I'm just having fun. Go ahead. Say what?
You, Michael.
Hey, y'all on fire. Hey, but no, y'all, really what it is, I'm a French finance. Again, this is a revolutionary brother of in African descent. He was born in black skin, white mask. These are some of the great books that he's written. I want to give y'all some of these information that I want y'all to read upon him. And so I'm glad you asked me that, y'all, because I don't get an opportunity really to say much about it. But again, I'm a pan-Africanist. What I simply mean is that my focus is directly on targeting and connecting my black roots to our ancestors in Africa and then those of us in the diaspora to connect. If we see a stronger front politically, economically, psychologically, and sociably, then we have a better connection to our ancestors who right now today are welcoming us back home to Africa. So, again, I'm not saying we have to leave right now if we don't want to, but what I'm trying to say is that they, our brothers and sisters, are reaching out to us, but we would never know this if we don't reach out to them and have open arms, and they are ready to sit down and collaborate with us. I have some folks in Guyana right now that I speak with. I have some folks in Namibia I speak with. And, again, I'm getting ready to probably expand our radio show to those. They'll probably be on the next broadcast. In other words, where are the real revolutionaries? Will you please stand up? They informed me that they would like to be a part of that. So, again, Frantz Fanon was one of those militants. At the same time, he was very influential in during the French War and where blacks were exterminated. White was still talking about it, the psychological and physiological effects of slavery, suffering, and death of our people. He was also a Marxist. Again, I'm not a Democrat nor a Socialist or Republican. I want y'all to know that. Don't give a damn who think about it. I am not. I'm not going to be a part of a damn system that told me I ain't shit. Excuse my expression. Y'all know me. I'm a little bit upset tonight because of the questions asked. But, again, I'm glad you did. But at the same time, when I think about all the auspices of this evil, wickedry, slavery, suffering, and death, and torture, and denial of education and access to freedom, justice, and equality, I tell y'all what, man, I'm very, very much aware and very much awake. So, again, Frantz Fanon, again, was one of my protégés. I speak highly of him and Brother Malcolm X, a few others, Marcus Garvey, those, anybody, I don't care who you are, if you were in the trenches of trying to straighten out and reacquaint blacks with their African ancestral roots and giving us an opportunity for independence. I like the fact that I want to try to make a nation within a nation, meaning we establish our own territory here in the United States, which belongs to us just like anybody else. And as a matter of fact, without our slavery, hard-earned debt, destruction, and physicality, this still would be a wasteland. So, again, this is much as ours as it is anybody else. We were not given our reparations, and we do not accept the fact we demand ours. So, therefore, yes, everybody, I'm sure by didn't throw you off by letting you know I am, again, Frantz Fanon. I am a pro-black person who is out for the cause of his people. I'm a pan-Africanist. I believe that my brothers and sisters should be first. And, again, why should we not be first? Why should not we be pro? Everybody else is pro. Ain't nobody mad at them being. So, again, I'm sorry if you think that way. Oh, well, because we're going to get over. If you don't like me for saying that, again, hasta la vista, baby, because, like I said, it's not going to change me. Y'all, you ladies got come on. Y'all talk if you want to. Thank you, Rachel. She said she got an earful. Good. Hey, yeah, bring everybody on next time. And she go, thank you. Bring them on, please do. So, man, talk to me now. What's going on now? Well, I mean, how do y'all – so y'all think that we need let me say this before I go. Now, a couple of books I want y'all to read by Frantz Fanon, F-R-A-N-T-Z, Frantz Fanon, F-A-N-O-N. It's called The Rest of the Earth and – White Skin, Black Mask. Woo! Uh-oh.
White Skin.
Boy, them some deep. Woo, them some deep books, y'all. I'm trying to tell y'all. Woo! So go ahead, man. Y'all, what's on your mind? Then we go to Sis Robson. Y'all got it rocking tonight, man. This makes 2 days in a row. I mean, 2 shows back to back. We had to let it.
Hey. Like I said, what's on my mind mostly when we, speak of anything that pertains to us is the portion of education, because some of us are not going to go through the most traumatic experiences all at the same time, like it's prepared, but we all have to be able to teach just in case it meets you at whatever point in life that you're in. And it happens to our young kids, being arrested for a piece of candy. You know what I mean? I've seen that video come out just recently about a young man that was, I think he had to been no older than probably 10.
So fairly young child, and they, you know, arrested him and threw him in the back of the cop car.
Yeah, that police, I saw that, man.
Mhm. And a man, another black male was there. He, you know, had put on his, you know, his recorder and recorded. And they
asked
him,
what the hell,
like,
he was doing.
Yeah, what is you doing with him? You know what I mean? You know, and had that been a white child, I'm sorry, but I do call them white child. It's okay. I don't, you know, we're going to call it like it is. Had it been a white kid, they would have been like, oh, why are you stealing from the store? You don't have anything to eat. You just get them something to eat. We don't need to go lock them up. We don't need to go do that. That's how that story would have went. I've seen it happen. You know what I mean? So
man.
I've seen the treatment happen right in front of my face. You know, the privilege of being white or being another race. Sometimes it don't even work for any other race. They still, even here, they still get treated as if they're black too, you know, but we get treated worse because we are. So just saying that, you know, we've got to stay on top of that. We've got to let these kids, let the kids know early while they're really, really young about us, you know what I mean, and about what it is to be an African descendant. I was talking to another gentleman that I work with, fairly young, probably mid-20s, and he's, you know, adopted by, you know, two white parents. And he was like, I didn't know anything about my culture and who I was at all. Like, they didn't even know how to teach me or how to, you know, tell me how to be a black male out here. And I was like, I understand that because it happens a lot. And we have to, you know, we don't know who we're going to run into, you know, of our culture. You know, we've got to let them know, hey, go check out this, go read this. You got any questions? You know what I mean? Be there to help and educate them, because a lot of us are not, a lot of us are washed in the culture, washed in their culture, washed in their school system, you know, washed in, you know, their reality, that we don't even acknowledge who we are, you know what I mean, until it becomes an issue, you know what I mean, until it becomes, oh, well, you got to wake up now. Like, we don't want that last minute, you know, response to a racial type situation that may happen or a dangerous situation that may come to us because we are, you know, African descendant. So we've got to make time to educate, make time to talk. Even sometimes small talk with people can jog their curiosity to want to do research about certain things. So that portion, and if you are already, you know, awake to everything that is going on now, it's now your responsibility to start protecting yourself. You know what I mean? Protecting yourself, paying attention to what's going on. I'm seeing a lot of people put cameras in their homes because now they're noticing.
They're going to start doing a lot more of that.
They start coming into homes, breaking into homes, you know what I mean?
Really?
Pulling men and women out, pulling children out, you know what I mean? You've got to stay armed. You've got to stay vigilant. You've got to pay attention to what is going on. Even if it's a good day, even if you live in a secure neighborhood, you do not know when and if somebody is going to come after you or try to do you harm because you are African, because you are African descent. You know what I mean? It's happened. You know what I mean? People follow people home. It's so many scenarios, but you've got to take it seriously. You've got to look at how they are trying to eliminate us by the smallest things. You know what I mean?
Anything.
You know? That's my,
thank
my
you, Sister Mad. I mean, you're definitely on point as always. It's every time we come on air, and we're definitely going to try to keep this pedal to the metal. All right, Sister Robinson, talk to me. I know you've been listening all, and you've been, like, say, very profound as well. I mean, you ladies lit it up tonight. I mean, we got the lights flashing here. I mean, appreciate you. I mean, they got some intense ears listening to you. So, you ladies, go ahead, Miss Robinson, talk to me. Sister Robinson, talk to me. What's up?
Yeah, well, I'm just listening and everything and just kind of like reflecting on, you know, what is it that we can do, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I see us doing a lot of different things, like I said, and none of them are working. I don't see any outcomes. I'm a person of outcomes. I don't care
mm-hmm.
what you do. I want to know what outcome did you have from that, okay?
Uh-huh.
So if you marched up and down the street with guns and screaming through a megaphone, what was the outcome? Did it change anything? You see what I'm
gotcha.
Saying? That's the type of person uh-huh. I am. That's how
fair.
I think. And so
okay.
I'm thinking, you know, it's like the definition of insanity because we continue to do the same things over and over and over again, and it's not getting us anywhere. It's not like the Panthers of the 60s that actually made changes. It's not like
the Panthers
of the 60s that created the breakfast program, that created
yes.
the WIC program,
medical
which the
program,
government
yes.
took it over and stole it.
Yes.
You know, they created, we had medical clinics. They treated sickle cell anemia, which us melanated
oh, yeah,
people
yeah, they
suffer
had it going.
With. They had it going on. So we have some big shoes to fill.
I
personally
yes,
don't use the word revolutionary because my next question is, what did you do that was revolutionary? Okay?
Wow.
So I say I'm an activist for right now. So my thing is, how do we come up with programs? I'm not talking about keep giving people handouts, okay? Because let's be real, our people and every people love handouts. People like when you just give them things for nothing, okay? So at some point, we have to understand when we're enabling our community. So these are the kind of things that I'm bringing my new organization forward with, is taking those Band-Aids off, creating long-term
mm.
solutions that's going to create mm. outcomes. Instead of handing
oh, yeah.
people food, let's teach people how to grow gardens. Let's teach people how to do agricultural work. Let's get people together and buy land. Land is going to lead
mm.
to food. Food is going to lead to jobs. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
So that's only one idea. Legislation, you know, politics is not working for us. Why do we continue to support it? The legal system, it don't work for us. The police system, it doesn't work for us. So we have to attack
okay.
all of these systems. Now you want to be revolutionary? Let's go.
Okay.
You see what I'm
wow.
saying? We're going to have to do something extreme. I'm not saying we're going to go over here and overturn the government. Let me put my disclaimer out there right now before anybody put
yeah.
words in my mouth. But this is
yeah.
a revolutionary thought. How do we repair these things? How do we change this? Because we're going to be looking at the same thing until we die.
Wow.
So where do we go from here? That's the bigger question.
I want to answer that question. Now, I get what you're saying about revolutionary because it bothers me when people call themselves a revolutionary but do nothing revolutionary
yes,
at all.
Never revolutionary. Never revolutionary.
I was like, if you can't feel those shoes that they put out there for us, then don't call yourself that. If you haven't went out your way
yeah.
to do anything to help or to create opportunities for anybody. So I definitely understand when you talk about that. Even me and Michael outside the show talk about that. Like, we've got to make, you know, we're doing some stuff down here. I'm partnering with him and his organization
oh, yeah.
to make some, you know, real changes, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
you know, because
mm-hmm.
that's the only thing that is going to actually push us forward is getting them to, hey, well, we got this opportunity to teach you how to do this, job opportunity, you know, all these different things that we are creating for you. So now you're going to walk in it. You know, if you're ready to change, you will change because the opportunity is there. If you don't want to, then you're going to choose not to. But we can't save anybody that
yeah.
does not want to progressively change and want to come out of the situation that they're in. So that's my intake on that portion. But, you know, I definitely agree with you. We've got to be proactive on creating the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It's true that, you know, we can still do the food drives and all those things, but we've got to
we've got to give them the tools to live their lives and to create those opportunities for themselves too.
Not sure.
And it's in their hands to choose it. That's, you know, that's where we're at now. When we create the opportunity, it's now in their hands to take advantage of that. Hey, this is what we have. This is what we are. Are you ready? You know, And help them get to that portion where they can sustain their own, you know, lives, and they can, you know, raise healthier children and create wealth within their families. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a progressive thing that's going to come over time. So just, I understand what you're saying, though. I get irritated when people are like, oh, I'm a revolutionary. But what have you done, revolutionary?
Yeah.
Where is the receipt?
You know,
that's what I'm starting to ask.
Sounds,
you know,
really sounds good. Every time I hear it, I'm going to ask that question. What have you done, revolutionary?
Yeah.
Because I really want to know.
That,
no, really?
Like me and Michael be like, well, I've been seeing you. Where did you come from? You know
really
what I mean?
Now? You doing what?
That's why he put on the whole, will the revolutionaries please stand up? Because
yeah,
we're
right. I put that on.
Revolutionaries to actually do something. Meet us out here on the front line.
We are on the front line, like you say, right? So children are watching us. Other people are watching us.
Yes.
So we have to be careful in how we carry ourselves, how we present, how we talk, how we dress. Everything about us, you know, should be up to par. When you show up and you high and you don't read or you don't watch the news, and you don't know what's going on, but you have all this mouth, we don't have a lot of time, you know, so we don't
have time
for that. You know, like, you know, we know we're going to have to leave some behind. We know that already. But my thing is, where do we go from here? You know, everybody needs to really ask themselves, where do we go from here?
And start
making some things happen. Start coming together, setting up some programs, all of this division and 500 different formations. Let's get together.
Let's get together.
Whatever your specialty is, let's form a group, cadres. Form cadres, left and right. Oh, you specialize in this? Okay, go over there with brother specializing in this. Go over there with Sister Maya. You know what I'm saying? We have to come together and make things happen, because if we have all this division, who's paying us any attention? These young people could care less.
This is confusing and madness killing me. People laughing.
They can care less. They want to know how we're going to stop the crime on the streets. How we're going to get the drugs out the neighborhood. How we're going to put food on the table.
Come on. Yeah.
Those are the kind of things that how we're going to get medical clinics to get treated. Okay, are we going to educate our children? How are we going to get school supplies? How are we going to get the people out of the tents that's sleeping outside into housing, which is a violation of their human rights? How are we going to do these things? That's a revolutionary thought.
And we can reposition them same people to become the warriors that we need with the boots on the ground, because they already know the streets, and that's all they lived on. So who could do
that?
But
see, that's what I'm saying. You have to get your people. If you can run a gang, you can be a gang leader, then you can run an organization.
Oh, man.
If you can sell drugs, you can do the finances for my organization. Get these people off the street and put them to doing something positive. They can do it. Sometimes people need to be talked to. Some people need love. Some people, we need different things. We have to meet people where they are. We have to get back to canvassing the communities, asking the people. It's about the people. What is it that you want to see in your community and make it happen?
Yeah,
that's it. Got to go back to the old school. We got to get out there and knock on the doors and ask the elderly people, are you okay? Do you have water? Do you need the trash taken out?
We need to
do that. We need to make sure these babies are being fed. We need to make sure that these babies are being taken care of properly.
And the way we do it, man, I tell you, both of you ladies, y'all are so electrifying. I got these lines lit up to where I don't have time, y'all, to answer any more questions because we got about 6 minutes. Then I don't know if they're going to let us go in our back room or not because we had technical difficulty, as y'all remember the other night, it just cut off. So we'll just try to, well, let's just play it by ear. But we got about 6 minutes left. Let me see if I can a little bit. For those of you who are listening to us, you're listening to People Power Radio tonight. We've been on the topic of, is there a genocidal plot to kill off the African-American community right here in the Western Hemisphere of the United States of America and those in foreign countries where representation of blacks are in concentration camps. Let me say to y'all again, this is People Power Radio. I'm your host of the most, Baba Wetafa, father of many nations. We also got our co-host, Sister Maya Yubor, and, of course, my sister, Sparkle Robson, off right here from Washington, D.C. So, y'all, we are definitely laying it out for y'all tonight. We hope that y'all got an enjoyment about what we had to say tonight. Again, we have about 5 minutes, so that's why I'm called talking kind of fast, to make sure that everything is said. And then when we try to go off into our back room, that you'll know that we didn't just blink out without saying goodbye to you or whatever. So, again, tonight, I hope that each and every one of you have enjoyed the show tonight. And I hope that you would tell someone before you go to bed tonight that you love them, because tomorrow may not be a promise. So, again, let your family know, let your friends know, let your community, let your kids, let your school teacher all know that you are thinking about them and that you wish them Godspeed. And for those of you here in Oklahoma who's been subjected to this grave and traumatic tornado, I hope that you are safe and that your families are safe and go with Godspeed. Please pray for me. I will pray for you. And let me say, may God bless and keep you. May He allow His face to shine upon you and give you peace. To everybody, good night, everybody. For those of us still our guests, please stay on. We're going to try to go over into our second gear. So thank you all very much. And if, again, you got a statement that you want an idea for a show, please call us up at area code 405-246-9089. That's area code 405-246-9089. And if you want to know who Michael Washington is, I got a Facebook page, Instagram page, and all of that. Just type in Michael Washington. And it's only one guy with that green suit on. If somebody that looked like me in a suit, I'm telling they lying. Y'all, thank y'all for this. But anyway, let me bless everybody. Again, we're not off the air yet, but if we do click off and y'all, and we don't say nothing else to you, you'll know why. Again, Sister Mia, y'all go ahead. Y'all, we still got about 4 minutes. Y'all go ahead and keep talking what y'all doing. Everybody's enjoying it. They want me to let y'all talk. They told me to shut up. Okay, so I'm getting out of there. Bye, everybody. Peace, love, and happiness. All right, ladies, take over.
Oh, man,
yeah. I told you I wasn't lying. They told me shut up. I'm not giving y'all ain't saying nothing. Oh, my.
Well, all I have to say is stay vigilant and protect yourselves. You know what I mean, out here because you know we're all targeted out here just for just for our skin color, just for us being here. You know what I mean? So. You've got to, watch your kids, pay attention to them, pay attention to who they around and the people around you because you don't even know who's watching and who's not watching. So that's all I got to say to it.
Well, this is Sister Robinson. I just want to say make sure that you tune into some type of news in your local neighborhoods every day. Check your foreign affairs out. Make sure you're reading and putting together plan, action. You know, it's all about organizing and action. And we need to be taking action.
Whoa.
I'll shake.
What's your comment on that? What I mean, I think it sounded like it made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to pay. That's part of, paying attention. You know what I mean? You're going to have to stay on top of stuff that you may think is not relevant. Tom, it is very relevant. And, they do speak in code. I'm just going to let y'all know that. They speak in code when it comes to us. They don't directly say anything. Sometimes they do.
Oh,
but, you've got to pay attention to what's going on around you. The daily news, the newspaper, your blogs. I know people use their phones now. So, we get some of that information a little faster than it can hit the news. But so pay attention to any resources like that. You've got to pay. You don't have any other choice at this point.
Ignore
what's going on. Or you stay on top of what's going on for your protection.
I'm sure. Right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Oh, man. Go ahead. I hear you. Yeah. Y'all ain't going to get me talking much. Them people told me to shut my mouth. I'm listening to y'all, man. I ain't letting them get on me no more.
Go ahead. Check this out.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Michael. Yeah, hey. Yeah, but y'all. Yeah. Y'all started stuff. I'm going to quit messing y'all. Hey, y'all, hey, they got about a minute left. It ain't me, y'all. They trying to force me to talk. I'm not bothering them. Don't get on me, y'all, next time y'all see me. Please. No.
I have one more thing I want to say.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how this slipped my mind, but I want to ask everybody to say a prayer. It's Brother Mamia Abu-Jamal's birthday tomorrow, political prisoner.
Okay.
And just take a moment of